When you're pitching a movie, certain historical conflicts just sell themselves. Battle of the Alamo, greenlit. Gunfight at the OK Corral, sold, 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 and sold. They made at least four movies out of that one. But the 2000 presidential election recount in Florida, didn't they make a 36-part series about it, and didn't it play continuously on CNN?
Yeah.
Such a subject is a tall order, and not everyone wants to revisit the story.
Was it political?
Gee, I really don't want to get in. I mean, this is, get over it. It's so old by now.
Okay, so Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia isn't the target audience, but HBO viewers will get to see Kevin Spacey and Dennis Leary as Gore staffers, Ron Klain and Michael Hooley, Tom Wilkinson as George W. Bush's strongman James Baker III, and Laura Dern as Florida's own electoral maven Catherine Harris. Remember her?
Mm-hmm.
Last week, we sat down with Recount screenwriter Danny Strong to talk about packaging all of these characters and all of this information into a two-hour movie. Was it hard to take real events and cram it into the structure, or did real life kind of help you out a little bit?
No, it was a nightmare. Because, you know, in real life, or not in real life, but in a movie, there's a big courtroom battle at the end. Yeah. And the whole movie's a build to the courtroom battle. Well, in this movie, there's 56 battles that are going on all the time. There are key battles that we have to deal with in the film, and our big exciting courtroom battle at the end of the movie happens to be one of the most famous courtroom battles of the last 50 years. Everyone knows what happens. So it was way more of an obstacle to turn this into a movie than it was helpful.
So then,
as far as the actual events dictating the story.
So what about the fact that everyone knows the ending? In fact, we're living under the presidency of the guy who won. Some movies, like, you know, Last Temptation of Christ, sold a lot of tickets and people knew who that one ended.
Sure.
So do you have to do something different in a movie if they know how it's going to pay off?
Yeah, you do. You have to – it's a different set of expectations that you're building towards.
Right.
You know, like I said, in a normal movie, you build to the courtroom battle. In this film, you can't build to the courtroom battle because we know what it is. So what are you building to? You know, what is the climax of the movie? And it's challenging, but you just have to think differently, you know? You just have to approach it in a different way than you approach your typical three-act structure film.
Then did you wind up emphasizing some courtroom battles more than maybe history would have told you to? Or was it more like you had to gain your dramatic momentum, not from the wins and losses in court, but from the emotions of the players?
No, the courtroom battles we chose to use were the ones where the story turned.
Okay.
So many of the battles, nothing changes because of the decision. Everything, whatever was the status quo, keeps being the status quo. One courtroom battle that the film only flicks at is the contest trial. That could have been a whole movie. It's such an amazing courtroom battle. But because we have to go straight to Bush v. Gore, we can't spend all this time on the contest trial. And also in the contest trial, nothing changed.
Right.
The judge just ruled that the recounts can't continue as they hadn't been up to that point.
And the other thing, I don't know if it was ever going to be a multi-part series, but I'm so glad you did it tight and in the hour and a half.
Sure.
It must have been hard for you, but did you ever consider, hey, let's get into all these nuances over several days?
The hardest part of the process was narrowing it down to fit in to a 100-minute structure.
Well, lucky.
But I'm glad I did because it plays so much better, I think, at this time.
It's really fast.
Yeah.
The acting is really exciting. Lucky for you, your words were brought to life by actors like Dennis Leary and Kevin Spacey. And here they are as Michael Hooley and Ron Klain, two of the main Democrats who are driving the recount fight.
That's 175,000 uncounted ballots.
How does
Ron?
A thing like that even happen?
Because punch card ballots are primitive. You got cardboard chads that get punched but don't go all the way through the hole, so they're hanging off the edge of the ballot.
Hanging chads.
Chad.
What?
There's no S.
The plural of Chad is Chad?
That's great democracy.
Jesus.
Yeah. So when you take these ballots and you put them through the tabulating system, what happens is the hanging chad get pushed back into the holes, and the machines read it as if the holes were never actually punched. So then these are discarded as undervotes. But wait. Sometimes hang and chad don't even hang. They're just dimpled.
Dimpled?
Yes. Okay, which means that the voter didn't align the ballot properly in the machine or just didn't push hard enough to get the chad to go through to the other
side. Well, how hard is this to punch a paper ballot?
It's pretty hard when you're 80-something years old, you're arthritic, and you're blind as a bat. Unfortunately for us, blind bats tend to vote Democratic.
Now, here's my question. Hooley in real life is this guru who's always dragged into Democratic campaigns, and he helped Kerry win Iowa, and he worked with the Gore campaign. Ron Klain is an ultra-smart lawyer. Was that the sort of scene where actually Klain would have known that information, or is the stuff about Chad so obscure that even a smart guy like Klain would have had to have had it explained to him?
Yes, it would have, because no one understood the minutia of Florida election law at the very beginning of this battle. And that actually helped me quite a bit,
yeah,
because I didn't have to have a scene that was dumbing down for the audience by making the character appear to not know stuff that he didn't know.
Right. Like, and when two lawyers talk to each other and one says, now we're going to appeal to the Supreme Court, which is the highest court
exactly.
in the land.
I didn't have to do that
yes.
because they didn't know what Chads were. They didn't know undervotes, overvotes. These were all new terms to them. Now, they all became masters of it within 24 hours because they're the great legal minds of the country. But it was new to them for the first time.
You know, one thing that you take away from the movie is it portrays the Democrats as much more internally conflicted. From day one, the Republicans said, we're in this to win it, and we know what we have to do. Whereas the Democrats, some sections said, let's not fight it too hard. Some sections said, let's fight it hard. Some sections said, let's see how it goes. Is that the impression that you came away from?
Absolutely. That is absolutely the impression that there was basically a schism on the Democratic side of how to pursue this between the grassroots guys and the Democratic establishment. And that schism really slowed them down. And it created kind of a wishy-washy middle-of-the-road strategy as opposed to the Republicans that were all on page. You know, they'd been shut out of the executive for 8 years. They knew what they wanted, and they really believed this was their election. They won it, and they were going to do anything they could to preserve that victory.
How much of it came down to the personalities or the circumstances of the guys leading it, James Baker and Warren Christopher?
Well, I mean, you have two completely different points of views. You have James Baker, who has run 5 presidential campaigns, you know, who knows how to roll up his sleeves and throw the punches where they need to be thrown, where Warren Christopher is the ultimate gentleman statesman. You know, he's so noble and so dignified and had genuine concern about how the world was going to view this recount, particularly countries that have contested elections that turn into gunfights. And he wanted the world to see that, look, the United States can do this in a dignified manner. So can you. And I think that it's a very noble approach. I think that
the other way of saying that is he brought a sheaf of documents to a knife fight.
I think that's completely accurate too. And I feel like the film lets the audience decide where they stand on it.
Maybe Baker outmaneuvered Christopher, but maybe that's not the right analysis. Maybe the right analysis is on the Republican side, you had a member of the inner circle running things, and on the Democratic side, Ron Klain, ultimately a staffer.
Yeah, that's absolutely correct. But another huge advantage that the Republicans had was Catherine Harris, Jeb Bush, that the people who were running the election, that were overseeing the recount, that were responsible for making this a fair process, were doing everything they could, legally, mind you,
yeah,
but everything they could to give this to Bush.
And another big advantage was that Bush was always ahead.
Yes.
Bush was always ahead, as Baker pointed out.
Yeah.
And it was always perceived that for Gore to win, he would have to stage an upset.
Well, for Gore to win, he needed to get votes recounted.
Yeah.
And that wasn't happening for many, many reasons. Partly his own fault, and then partly being out-strategized by James Baker. And I think some people could argue that at times Baker crossed the line. But some people would say, no, that's just politics, and he played it right.
At the end of the movie, you give Baker a moment where he talks to his troops, and he tells them that even in the toughest times, we upheld the Constitution. In fact, everything we saw here is a testament to the Constitution. I think we have that clip. Let's hear some of that.
People are going to say all kinds of things about this election. That it was down to 154 votes, that Bush's brother was the governor, that the U.S. Supreme Court gave it to us. But I want you to remember that we won every single recount. Never once did we trail Gore. And who knows how many votes we lost when the networks called Florida for Gore before all the polls were closed on election night. But more important than all that is that the system worked. There were no tanks on the streets. This peaceful transfer of power in the most emotional and trying of times is a testament to the strength of the Constitution and to our faith in the rule of law.
So two questions. Question one, James Baker saw the movie. Do you know if he liked that scene?
I think he loves that scene. You know, in that scene, it's an example of how we executed the film, in that that scene is fully realizing Baker's point of view, giving him his complete say.
The last thing I wanted to talk to you about was the last thing we see, or actually don't see, in the movie. I was waiting for the on-screen coda, the words that you'd normally get in a movie of historic fiction, where it said, after George Bush became president, maybe they could have talked about the war in Iraq. Maybe you could talk about what the media consortium and other people who went back and looked at the ballots found out. But there was nothing there.
No.
Was there a discussion? Were you ever going to tag something on to say, you know, we did it when they finally did the full recount, they found different results?
Sure. There was a huge discussion about exactly that. The way that we thought would be the best way to end it would be to give the results of the media consortium, which said what happened in Florida. By the way, these results are profoundly misunderstood to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Most people believe that George Bush, when all the votes were counted, won the state of Florida, because that was the headlines when the consortium was completed. That is incorrect.
The headlines in the Washington Post and the New York Times, I'm paraphrasing, said something along the lines of, even if Gore had won the case in front of the Supreme Court, he still would have lost, the recount shows. And that is true.
That is technically true.
But the subhead said, of course, if they had counted all the ballots, he would have won.
Exactly. But we'll take it even a step further. So had all of the ballots that were counted when the whole state was counting before the U.S. Supreme Court shut it down, had those ballots been counted, which was about 61,000 ballots, Bush would have won. But had all the uncounted ballots been recounted, Gore would have won. By all ballots, I mean the 175,000 uncounted ballots. But Gore's victory was 60 to 171 votes,
mm-hmm.
based upon if you counted Dimple Chad's or not. Well, almost 2,000 ballots had gone missing by the time the study was completed. So a 60-vote victory is not a 60-vote victory.
If you can't count 2,000
votes. If you can't count 2,000 votes.
Right.
So the truth is, we will never know who received the most votes in the state of Florida.
All right. Danny Strong, writer of the new HBO movie Recount. Thanks for coming in,
Danny. Thank you so much.
In the days since our interview with Danny Strong, the New York Times reported that Warren Christopher was unhappy with his depiction in the film. Bill Daly, who is a senior Gore strategist, was quoted as saying, quote, "The perception that Warren Christopher was some wuss who got hoodwinked by Jim Baker is absolute fantasy." The BPP called Danny Strong and asked him to comment on Warren Christopher's complaint.
I don't believe the film blames them for anything. It shows their strategy, in which both of them were not so anxious into getting into a street fight with the Republican Party over this. I think Christopher's point of view is quite noble, and he's the consummate gentleman, noble statesman.
Recount debuts on HBO on May 25th and will be rebroadcast quite often.
I still can't get out of my head that Chad is plural.
Yeah. Chad,
there are lots
Chad.
Of interesting things in that interview.
Chad,
that one just
fish.
Is still moose. Chad.
Do you know the plural of mongoose is either mongoose or mongeese?
Mongeese.
Yeah. Or mongooses.
It is not mongooses.
Yeah, it's either. Both are acceptable. I looked it up once.
Of course you did.
Yeah, because we were debating it.
Of course.
Yeah.
That's it for this hour. The BPP. We are always online at npr.org/Bryant Park. I'm Rachel Martin.
And I'm Mike Pesca. This is the Bryant Park Project from NPR News.